going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Houston, it's our time now. With the 34th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the Houston Texans select Jaden Higgins, wide receiver, Iowa State.
There you go. Nice job, Owen Daniels. Did a good job. Just got up there. Shouted out Wisconsin for 2 seconds. Shouted out Houston. Announce the pick. No stories, no anecdotes, no preambles. Good job, OD, on all the picks that you did. Way to go. Jaden Higgins, 34th pick in the draft of the Houston Texans. And from there, they were off and running, adding players to the team. No picks on night one, traded out of the first round to the 34th overall pick. And they end up picking 9 players over the weekend. Jaden Higgins, the headliner in the class, they would go on in the second round to add Ariante Ursary, offensive lineman out of Minnesota. They draft 2 more in the second round, 2 more players, 2 Jalens, Jalen Knoll, wide receiver, Iowa State, Jalen Smith, cornerback, USC, and then they drafted 5 more players on day 3. 9 in all, here was D'Amico Ryans with his feelings on this year's draft class.
Yeah, we feel really good about this draft class. Put a lot of work in, so with our scouts, our coaches, guys put a lot of work in, and did a great job evaluating talented guys, not only about the talent, but also the people. We brought in a ton of great people, also great players, and that's the formula that we like, and it's worked well for us, and we think these guys come in and contribute and help our team get better.
Yeah, and the people part of it, the mindset, the type of people they are, it feels like that got brought up first with every single player that D'Amico got asked about on Saturday, which I'm fine with. Here was D'Amico Ryans on the mindset that they were looking for in players.
The mindset is definitely everything, right? If you have the mindset to work, the mindset that you really enjoy and love playing football, that fits our building, that works for us, that works with the guys that we already have here. We have a ton of guys in our locker room already who love football, and I just believe that when you love the game of football, right, we're gonna get your best. Right, when you go through those difficult days, when it's going to be hard moments in training camp, hard moments throughout the season, I feel like your love for football will give you that edge to keep pushing through when the difficult moments come.
All right, so like 98% humidity, stuff like that. All right, positives and negatives from the class, Seth. I think I'll start positives. I thought the 2 big positives were that they got some weapons for C.J. Stroud. 3 of the first 5 picks were skill position guys, including 2 wide receivers that I think can get into the rotation early, and then a 3rd down running back, which I think is a need for this team. You can't go into the season with Dari Ogunbowale as your 3rd down back. You need more juice out of that position. So they took care of that, and while they were a little light on the offensive line, we'll certainly get to that and maybe the negatives or perceived negatives about this class, Ursary does seem to fit the new mentality that they're looking for or seemingly looking for. They seem to deny they're looking for it, but you know, I think you can read the tea leaves and go, they're looking for a different vibe in that offensive line room. They need one. That Ursary seems to fit that mentality. We'll see how good a player he is, but he seems to fit the mentality they're looking for in that O-line room.
Yeah, the Ursary is Ron Hughley's not happy with our last segment. So the Ursary's
well, don't let him spoil this segment.
Sorry. Ursary, I think that there is a. It's interesting. He's huge. He's gigantic. He uses his weight well. He's way more athletic than you'd expect by his size and kind of the way he moves. It doesn't look fluid, but he flat out gets places. He gets from A to B very quickly. He uses his hips well. I think there's still room for him to grow in terms of actually the physicality side of things in the run game. And part of that is, you know, he plays in a scheme that's an outside zone-based scheme. So if he were in a different scheme where they were just running duo and power and all this stuff all the time, he'd be maybe a little bit more polished in that. I really like the upside of him. I really think Ursary has the potential to, with that size especially, give you versatility in the run game. But also, you know, when you go back and you watch him versus Abdul Carter at Penn State, the speed rush element to the outside wasn't the issue. He handled Abdul Carter pretty well. It was some of the stunts to the inside where Ursary got caught just a little stepping up underneath himself at times and couldn't quite get to him quickly enough when Abdul Carter slanted to the inside. So that's something he's going to have to work on. And that is, you know, that's coachable. That's experience, all of that. I don't think that he lacks the ability to do it athletically. But as the number one thing you worry about is pass protection. He checks off a lot of boxes with pass protection.
Yep. As far as the two receivers in the third down back go, the two receivers, Jaden Higgins, Jalen Noel, and then the third down back they got in the fourth round. They traded back into the fourth round on Saturday to get Woody Marks out of USC. Do you think that all three of these guys are in the rotation come week one? Are Noel and Higgins two of your top, say, five receivers? And is Woody Marks a guy that's getting three or four touches a game?
It's a great question. I think that there's a if we're to take the individuals out of it and just talk about the type of position, it's a lot more nuanced and harder to learn how to play slot well as a rookie, and a lot of the stuff that you do underneath. It's just you reading coverages a lot. You got to kind of figure out ways where the soft spots and the zones are more so than some of the things they might ask a bigger guy like Higgins to do. So if I had to handicap it, I would say Higgins, very likely that he's in the rotation week one. The week one, there still might be a little bit with Noel where, well, okay, we want somebody that's got a little bit more command of the playbook and polish, because obviously Christian Kirk's going to be there too already. So, there's a very good chance both of them will be. I think Higgins, it's just there's maybe a more clear path for him immediately because he's got that thing you can't coach, and it doesn't matter as much about scheme as he's got a wing. He's got a catch radius.
He's a big guy.
Size, all that.
Yeah, he's a big guy. Now, Noel, I think, will be – I think he'll be active in week one because I think there's the possibility of him returning kicks for this team and punts.
Yeah, okay, so I guess – okay, active or in the rotation? I think they're both active.
Yeah.
But, yeah, in the rotation at receiver, I think Jaden Higgins more likely.
What about Marks? What do you think about him, fourth-round running back, getting in there? Because it sounds like he's more of a third down back than a bell cow kind of guy.
Right. I think special teams is going to be a factor for anybody we talk about in the skill positions with the rookies. But just strictly from the running back side of things, I think a lot of that depends on Damian Pierce and how they feel about Damian. I think it was very clear last year during training camp and during the season, and anytime we've heard Nick Caserio talk about Damian Pierce, I think they still believe in Damian Pierce. He didn't really do anything in training camp last year, and I'm including practice. I didn't think he did anything in practice or in the games that looked like, oh, yeah, you got to keep that guy on the squad. But they kept him, and they fired the offensive coordinator eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that if you go back to when Damian was really effective consistently, it was with a different offensive coordinator, ran a different style of system. Like, he was way better under Pep Hamilton than he was under Bobby Slowick. So that a lot of that might come down to just how they feel about Damian Pierce by week one. And Agumba Wale still brings a lot to the table on special teams.
Is a
reliable receiving back, even though he's not your dream of what you want one to be. That there's, I'd say 50-50 on Woody Marks.
There's certain guys on this team, and Dare is one of them, that I feel are on the team primarily for special teams. And then if you need to use them, it's a break glass in case of emergency situation, like on offense or defense. You know, that's what that feels like.
Dare is the guy who I perennially in my mind feel like my knee jerk is like, yeah, boy, he's up and coming, and he's just got to turn the corner. He's like a 20. He's 31 years old.
He was in camp at the Greenbrier with the Texans back in the day.
I know. But he's perennially the guy that's like, oh, maybe this is the year. Maybe they just kind of find the right spot for a Gumbawale.
As far as negatives go about the draft class, the biggest question that we're hearing is, did they do enough on the offensive line? Should they have done more on day one to go up and get one of those offensive linemen that went before them? Did they eventually do enough in this 9-man class? Ursary wound up being the only offensive lineman that they take. Now, Nick Caserio will be quick to point out that there's other ways to get guys in the building. You know, you can make trades. Guys are going to get cut. If I had to guess, this is the group that they're going to be. You know, the group of 8 or 9 guys that are active on week one are going to come from the guys that are now in the building with the Texans. You know, barring a couple undrafted guys that they signed this week, you know, I don't think there's a big trade coming. I think they're going to roll with this group, and they're going to hope that this is a better coached group than the group last year.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be genuine competition. I believe that. Their actions last year during training camp were that there was no competition on the offensive line. And they barely practiced during training camp. Your offensive tackles were hit or miss as to whether they were out there at practice during the day.
Yeah.
Kenyon Green was locked in at left guard. Juice Scruggs was going to be the center. And Shaq Mason, old reliable, he's going to be your right guard. You look up and 3 of those guys are gone off the team. Laramie had been in a position where he deserved to not have to compete.
Obviously. Yeah.
You know, I would have liked him to practice more.
Yes.
But there has to be absolute actual competition at all 5 positions.
Is there anybody in ink right now on this offensive line?
I think it's as good as ink that Titus Howard will be starting either at right tackle or at guard.
Don't know where. I'm with you on that.
I've seen a lot of people say, hey, Laken Tomlinson can play right guard. I would agree, except that he's up there in years now, and he's only ever played left guard in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's as simple a thing, but possibly.
I think other negatives or maybe areas of criticism. I think some of the trades up to me, I'd just like to know more about. I mean, obviously the Texans have better intel than we do sitting and watching the draft. Trading up to get Jalen Smith, a guy who most of the experts gave a day three grade to, and later in day three, a lot of them, they not only draft him in the third round, but they trade up to do so. I'm just curious about that. Trading up to get Graham Mertz, a quarterback who was, you know, he wasn't a great college quarterback by any means, and he's coming off an ACL tear. I would question, if you had told me they were drafting Graham Mertz at all, I would have been surprised before the draft, let alone, again, they gave up a 7th-round pick to do it. I'm not running up to NRG Stadium today, banging on the door saying, I need an explanation.
Yeah.
It does feel like that Nick Caserio trades up. I mean, he trades a ton, period. He traded 7 times in this draft. There are times that he goes after players where I'm curious that, okay, are we burning a pick here when you don't have to?
Well, I think and that's where the whole burning the pick side comes into looking at the long term. If you're trying to take the best player available, QBs are in a different category. And I think that good organizations, and this is what the Patriots did the entire time Tom Brady was with the Patriots, they drafted a quarterback on average about every other year. That you're just always taking a swing and seeing how a guy develops. And over time, if you get one of those guys, it translates into a 2nd-round pick with Jimmy Garoppolo, or it can turn into Tom Brady himself. I don't like bringing up Tom Brady as the example because that's what everybody does.
So Mel Kiper did all weekend talking about Shadur.
But the thinking behind Tom Brady wasn't, hey, I'm going to draft this guy and he's going to supplant Drew Bledsoe and become one of the greatest players of all time. The thinking is that, no, even though we have Drew Bledsoe as our quarterback, we're still going to draft quarterbacks and we're going to see how they develop. So I'm cool with that. I think that's what a lot of good organizations, not all of them, but a lot of them have that theory that you should always be drafting quarterbacks and always have something in the hopper. Cause at the very least, it becomes a more affordable replacement for Davis Mills. And if it develops real quickly and you felt comfortable with him, then you could actually some way down the line, if the team's desperate for a quarterback in the middle of the season, you can get a higher draft pick for Davis Mills than you might expect.
Yeah. Success for the Mertz pick is if he's your backup quarterback in 2026. That's an extreme success right there. I don't have a problem with them taking a quarterback. I'm just not a huge Graham Mertz fan is all. That's all.
I don't like the way that his name flows as it sounds like the word grammar.
Grammerts. Yeah.
Or it sounds like there's no M at the beginning of his second name. You said Graham Ertz at the beginning of the segment, And I was like, Sean, his name is Mertz. And then I realized, like, oh, no, that's how it sounds, man.
Grammertz. Yeah. Grammertz. My only other criticism of this draft class is that they drafted way too many Jalen spelled a different way characters. It felt intentional towards you, Seth. By the time they were still drafting Jalens in the sixth round, and there were four of them now, Jaden and three Jalens, I'm like, this is personal. You've done an incredible job today, by the way.
I'm going to give myself four dings.
Yes, one for each Jaden, Jalen.
For each of the Jans.
Yeah,
the ins name Jay.
Good way
to put it. I've had a cheat sheet in front of me the entire time. I've got them highlighted. I've got the draft order in front of me, and I've got Jaden, Jalen, and Jalen all highlighted.
Yep. Yeah. As long as we got a couple minutes here, I saw the tweet. What exactly, the audience is wondering, what exactly is Ron saying to us on Twitter?
Well, I had basically taken every argument I've heard about why Shedeur Sanders is getting screwed over and shot each of them down mercilessly.
Yeah.
And I, like you guys know, I'm not really on social media all that much, so I don't know what Ron's been saying, but Ron basically said, what'd he say? According to Sean and Seth, I'm the meek, dumb one, SMDH. And then you responded, and he said, I'm just acknowledging knowing I'm done, dumb. Now that I know, I understand it's time to smarten up and change my ways.
Oh.
Now after listening to you guys, now I know this all makes sense, and he got exactly what he deserves.
Oh, okay. I can't wait.
I responded, and I just said, I'm just dumbfounded that people are choosing to ignore the plainly obvious and very public concerns that people have been talking about for months rather than admit that those concerns appear to have been valid.
Yeah. Okay.
People are acting like this is an ambush or a surprise or something. People have said, oh, all these reports come out after the slide. No, these reports have just been aggregated by various people and condensed and put out to you. These reports have been here for months about the way Shedeur has been conducting himself in actively tanking the NFL draft.
Yep.
He's been actively tanking the draft, and it worked.
Yeah.
If you're trying to defend the honor of Shedeur Sanders right now, you're basically also accusing him of having an ineffective draft strategy. Yeah. His strategy was to tank the draft, and it worked way more effectively than he thought it
did. It ever? Remember, we'll have the audio from Lewis Riddick in the next segment. Remember, he's like, "I hope Shedeur lands outside the top three." Oh, he did. He landed outside the top 143.
Has Ron been waging a war against the conspiracy?
He was tweeting quite a bit this weekend. Shedeur. He was tweeting a lot about it this weekend. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He felt bad for Shedeur.
You read one of them, and it was Ron had said something about like it's better to commit a crime than to be bad in meetings. And my response was yes.
Been that 100%. Way for, well, it's been that way forever. I replied to Ron's tweet just now, knowing what he had tweeted over the weekend, and I said, you as a Chiefs fan should know better than anybody that NFL teams will overlook criminal activity to draft them if they can be good on the football field. And I said, if Shedeur had assaulted somebody, the Chiefs might have traded up to go get Shedeur Sanders.
Right. You know what happens, though, is most of the guys that commit crimes or what have you, they know and understand how to be respectful to a coach.
Yeah.
Because at some point they got to talk to the coach, and the coach is like, hey, what happened? What's up with these stolen laptops? And the player says, I made a huge mistake. I'm just here to play football, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As opposed to just acting like you're better than everybody else. Coaches hate
that. Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is. With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
That.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. If you're asking, is a coach more willing to excuse a crime that you committed in the past than he is you being disrespectful to his face or to his friends' faces on other organizations or what have you? Yes. The answer is yes.
That's a simple answer. That's right.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've been paying attention to the NFL a long time.
Yeah.
I know a lot of super solid dudes who also have screwed up and committed a crime at some point.
Yeah.
But as football players,
right,
they're super solid dudes. They don't throw their offensive linemen under the bus. They don't disrespect, like, to their faces, mm-hmm, coaches and GMs. Yeah, there's a difference.
I'm sorry I have to
burst the naivete of apparently a large segment of NFL fans that, yeah,
There are guys
that have committed crimes in the past that teams are willing to overlook.
Yeah.
More so than people who are just D-bags.
Yeah. 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 Kansas City Chiefs, chief among those teams that do that. Mm-hmm. They've done that a lot. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. You can tell it's going to be a saucy day here on the station. I'm very excited to listen to Sports Radio 610 throughout the rest of the day. Speaking of Shador, I think there's two quotes, if we're going to nail it down to the mentality that may have done him in when it comes to his draft stock, we've got that for you. And the two biggest Shador cheerleaders having to eat their words over the weekend, not Ron Hughley, but on TV. We've got that for you coming up as well. Stay there. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, so Shador Sanders is a Cleveland Brown, and that's got everybody feeling all different types of ways this morning. He enters a quarterback room after going 144th overall in the draft Saturday. In the fifth round, he goes 144 to Cleveland, a team that was rumored to be in on him with the second overall pick, and then day two with the first pick of day two. They wait till day three, and they go for the value, Shador Sanders in the fifth round. This quarterback room is now Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco, Dylan Gabriel,
yeah,
Shador Sanders, and technically, especially because he's been seen working out in the Browns facility in Browns gear on Instagram, Deshaun Watson is still
Deshaun
in that quarterback
Watson
room,
and yeah, will be. So the question becomes, how do you have a three-way competition at quarterback? Because this is where I know we're ignoring Deshaun, but Flacco's not going to be a part of the competition.
Oh, the
Flacco
competition
is Flacco.
Yeah, yeah.
Flacco is Flacco, and then there's three guys that are going to be competing,
yes,
either to be the starter or a backup or, yep, whatever it might be. I mean, I think you can go into this, I don't know, man. I don't think this is Stefanski's pick. Just based on body language when they drafted him, and it's hard to divvy up reps anymore because you don't get that many reps during training camp. The restrictions on the practices,
yes,
are just that you don't get the practice. You get about a half as many reps as you did back in the day.
And they're all new.
I would say even less than half of the reps you used to get back in the day.
And all three guys you're talking about, Pickett, because I'm with you on Flacco, stepped off the couch last year and won a bunch of games. Pickett, Dylan, and Gabriel are all new to the Browns.
Yeah.
Pickett, Gabriel, and Shador are all new to the Browns, and two of them are new to the league as a whole.
Yeah.
Boy, that's a great point. Like, how do you conduct? Like, a lot of it's probably going to be how these guys are looking at, you know, how they're doing behind the scenes in the film room, how quickly they're getting up to speed and whatnot.
So it gets super, super interesting. I will say, credit to Shadur. It seemed from the clips I saw and what have you, he seemed to keep a pretty positive attitude about everything.
Yeah.
Even as he got pranked called by the son of the GM of the Falcons, my God. Not the GM.
The defensive coordinator. Ulbrich's son, yeah.
So he looked like he kept up a pretty positive attitude. He tweeted out whatever he was supposed to tweet out afterwards. I saw somebody on NFL Network, I think, maybe it was Daniel Jeremiah, saying, you know, it's a competition. Like, this is a genuine competition really between him and Dylan Gabriel when it comes to the rookies, and Kenny Pickett, who's probably going to be slotted in as the starter day one of training camp.
The odds makers have him as the favorite right now.
Yeah, and that makes the most sense. It's not like I feel awesome about Kenny Pickett or anything, but it's hard to actually run a competition that way.
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And the range on Shadur, look, if he continues to do what he was doing that drove him to the fifth round in the first place, he could be gone by the second week of training camp. Or if he doesn't, he could be their starter in week one. You know, like, there's a big range of what could happen here.
Well, I wonder, with Shadur, the other big X factor that's impossible to figure out, like, how it should or shouldn't have affected his draft status, but I'm going to speak about it just in terms of him moving forward. One of the challenges he will face is that his only coach really has ever been his father.
Yeah.
And he's been very closely aligned with that and all that. And I'm saying this honestly without any, like, trying to talk about the draft status or anything. That's a big shock and a change. And it might be one that ends up being really good for him in that, you know, Deion is tough and demanding, but it's different when it's your dad versus being in an actually competitive situation where you're actually fighting for a job.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he shouldn't have been the starter at Colorado. Obviously, he should have been the starter and at Jackson State. But now he's really going to have to go out and genuinely earn it on his own for the first time. And it might end up being a really, really good thing for him.
Yep.
So it's just, and so far from what I've seen publicly, at least, he seems to be embracing
it. He does. He was asked about it on his conference call with the Browns. Like, would you have done things differently? He said yes. This is all good. I'm not rooting against Shadur Sanders necessarily, but I think it's pretty clear that the league has spoken about what they thought about how he, and I think Deion too. I think a lot of this is a referendum on Deion as well, where Shadur wound up. Shadur can't walk into the building talking like, hey, Ben, I'm going to come to this year. Talking like he was at the combine here.
If you ain't trying to change the franchise or the culture, don't give me. So you should know history repeats itself over and over and over, and I've done it over and over and over, so it should be no question why an NFL franchise should pick me. You think I'm worried about what critics say or what people got to say? You know who my dad is? They hated on him too. So it's like it's almost normal. Without people hating, it's not normal for us. So we like the adversity. We like everything that comes with the name. That's why we are who we are.
Well, you got adversity. You got that. I would suggest, I wouldn't bring up any of the culture change that you were a part of at Colorado, and I would also not bring up your daddy. I wouldn't do
that. Well, or the Jackson State either. I mean, like, how did you handle adversity of not being a highly recruited quarterback out of high school? You went and played for your father at a smaller school, and hey, you did great when you guys loaded up talent. Travis Hunter in the SWAC.
Colorado, in the SWAC, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's where I'm like, that's not actually proving everybody wrong, really. That's like bowing out of going to play at a big school to go play for your daddy. Most of what he said there, I actually didn't mind, really. I mean, you've got those stories about Tom Brady telling Bob Kraft, this is the best decision you ever made. I don't mind a quarterback having an extreme level of confidence. I think, though, that it's the misgauging was that in Deion really believing that he was a top five talent, when in many, many other drafts, it's not a slam dunk that Cam Ward would have even been a top four quarterback in many other drafts.
Yep.
This was a year where a lot of people thought he was a top two quarterback. There are many reports that other people didn't have him in the top two, Shadur. But it wasn't a slam dunk type of year. So when you try to take that attitude of you're the culture changer and that you're actively actively. This is not an unpublished or anonymous report. Deion is saying there are teams that we don't want you to go to.
Yeah.
That's awesome if you're a guy who's a top three talent.
Yep.
If you're the kind of guy that people would trade up to get,
yep.
you can get away with that. And honestly, I don't like the revisionist history of people saying that Archie Manning wasn't criticized for finagling Eli's drafts.
Yeah.
That's been a running criticism for 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, people hated that at the time.
Yep.
The difference was that Eli Manning was a slam dunk top three pick.
Yes.
And without even criticizing the thought of the strategy or anything, it was a bad strategy for a prospect the caliber of Shadur.
Yeah, his dad failed him in this. His dad has done good by him for his whole life. In this particular thing, he failed his son, I thought. And Shadur is not blameless, obviously. But I thought Deion failed miserably here in guiding his son through this process. Clearly, he wound up in the fifth round. Here was Lewis Riddick. This is also something that just in retrospect, 3 weeks later, just sounds so silly. Riddick and Mel Kiper, their act on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, it's actually kind of fun to watch because they just guys realizing they're so wrong. But this is Lewis Riddick back on April 9th.
Shadur is someone who wants to be collaborative. He is someone that you want to talk with. He doesn't like to be told just this is the way we're going to do things,
okay,
and then you're just going to need to fall in line. And he kind of has, he's earned that right because of the way he has played. This young man is going to be just fine. And you know what? I hope he doesn't go in the top three picks. I hope he doesn't. And I think his camp would tell you the same thing. There are other teams that they want to go to.
He could be in a better situation, obviously, if
Absolutely.
You fall. And we know how much that matters for a player's trajectory.
The funniest thing about that is he succeeded. He did not wind up, spoiler alert, he did not wind up in the top three picks. He wound up 144, going to a team that was picking second overall in the draft.
Yeah.
He wound up still going to one of the teams picking in the top three at 144.
Right.
Irony.
And so nobody wants to go to the Browns. One of the popular arguments about why Shadur was so wronged was, hey, Johnny Manziel was a jackass and he got drafted in the first round. Right. Most teams had taken Johnny Manziel off their board in the first round, except for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
The new owner
talked to a homeless guy who wanted Johnny
ignored
Manziel.
All the reports and everything else everybody else was saying because he wanted to draft Johnny Manziel.
Here's Mel Kiper Jr. This is after Shadur had fallen out of the first round. This is before draft coverage started on night two.
And I think the guy that I'm going to be watching all night is obviously Shadur. And I'm not going to talk about him all night. I'm going to talk about it now. We have had sliding quarterbacks that have done really well. And they've gone in the second round. Of course, Joe Montana dropped to the third round, right back in 1979 when Jack Thompson went before him and Steve Fuller went before him. But I think the second round or the third round, if he gets into the third round, it's nonsensical right now. That's ridiculous.
You stick to your guns, Mel Kiper. You're not wrong just because he didn't get drafted. The proof will be in the career, and we'll wait and see where it winds up going.
Okay, that was Mike Greenberg giving Mel Kiper a pep talk. That didn't work. And by the way, Mel Kiper lied. He did talk about Shadur all night long on night two and a lot. And, you know, and then obviously he ends up going in the fifth round when the third would have been nonsensical to Mel.
Honestly, and part of it is I can see why people are holding so hard and fast because they spent months accusing anybody that predicted Shadur wouldn't get drafted in the first round as just providing clickbait or they're just being hot take artists or whatever. I didn't really have a dog in the fight, and I was kind of curious to see how it was going to work out. I just wonder, it's just strange to me that when people are saying something for months and you're accusing them of just being clickbaiters or hot take artists or you don't know what you're talking about, people who are saying that there's a good chance Shadur wouldn't go in the first round, that's what those people were accused of. When it doesn't happen, there is no acknowledgement that, oh, maybe they were correct.
Right.
It was, nope, I'm going to triple down. There must be some other explanation than those people being correct. Because I can't be wrong.
Right.
I can't possibly be wrong.
Right.
There's got to be skullduggery going on here.
Yeah. In a league where, like, quarterbacks, if there were teams out there that felt like whatever the whole Shadur package was, that whatever came with taking Shadur Sanders was worth taking in the second or third round. It's the quarterback position. It's the most important position. If they felt like that could be coached out of him or that it was a phase or he's intentionally tanking the draft, he realizes I made a mistake and I need to go about my business differently, which again, as you pointed out, Seth, to his credit, in the 24 hours since he was drafted, he does seem to be, whether contrite or self-aware, whatever adjective you want to use, It does feel like there's a chance it'll be a different Shedeur Sanders walking into the building in Cleveland than the ones that than the Shedeur Sanders that walked into all those interview rooms taking FaceTime calls with his headphones on, still having music playing around his neck.
You know what's funny? It's when you're the son of a Hall of Famer. I can remember Kevin Biggio. Craig Biggio was talking about it, but I think with Kevin, no, it was Kevin Biggio talking about how sometimes his father wasn't the best coach because for him personally, because Craig Biggio is a guy that can kind of just be like, I don't know, just hit it, you know?
They can
do things more naturally than somebody with lesser talent.
Yeah.
And I feel like on the PR side of things, I think Deion, kind of in that same manner, I don't think he quite recognizes or realizes that, oh, I was that much better than my son.
Mm-hmm.
And that I can't be encouraging him to act the same way I acted because I could be Deion. I was Neon Deion.
Yes.
Because I was one of the best defensive backs who ever lived.
Yep.
And it's just different when you're a marginally first round quarterback talent.
Yep.
You know, it's just not the same thing.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We will circle back to the draft a little later on in the show. The Rockets Rockets on Saturday, big missed opportunity, huge game tonight. This is the biggest Rockets game in years coming up tonight. We will get you ready for that coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast, you can text the show 713-572-4610. That is the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Rockets, this is the most important game that this team will have played since the 2019 postseason, probably. I know they played in the COVID bubble in 2020, whatever. Like, this is the Golden State Warriors. You're the two seed. Like, the minimum that I think most Rocket fans want to see in the postseason is that if they're going to go down in the first round, that you're going down punching and swinging and knowing clearly what the things are you need to fix in the offseason, too. Like, I think clarity, coming out of the postseason with some clarity as to what the strategy should be, is a big thing. It can't look like it did on Saturday, in my opinion, Seth. All the things that we've talked about with this team, say what you will about how inefficient they are offensively, how the operation in the half court looks so bad, how they, you know, we bring up, especially after the first couple games, first three games of this series, just how late they initiate offense in the half court. All these things. The one thing that you could always say about the Rockets is they are gritty defensively, they're gritty period, and you're not going to push them around, and they're not going to be timid. They will be swarmy at the very least, the Rockets will, if we can use a Texans term.
Yeah, and they were just miserable in the paint. The Warriors are going to attack the backcourt, then, all right, get the easy buckets, and then they were just messing up easy buckets from Şengün to Jalen Green to Amen Thompson. It was just a mishmash of all the weaknesses of the Rockets team is they're a poor shooting team. But even missing the point blank stuff.
Yeah, they were timid, man.
Night.
They were timid. When guys are ball handling, they were weak with the basketball, turning the ball over. And Alperen Şengün, man, I don't know what happened to him on Saturday. And it's been this way throughout this series. Is he's looked a little off offensively. He's passing up shots that he would normally take when he is shooting the ball in that sort of mid range set shot that he has.
Yeah.
He's short-arming it. He's missing layups. He's 1 of 5 from the free throw line is something, too, I think, with Şengün on Saturday that is, I think, part and parcel of just what is with him. But I think the team as a whole, man, they kind of got pushed around by a team that was Steph Curry and a bunch of dudes, you know?
So this is the big – I mean, tonight is huge, not because it's impossible to come back from down – 3-1, it's very, very hard. But especially when you lose the home court advantage if you lose tonight. You gotta take care of business tonight to mathematically, home court advantage wise, everything else, you just simply have to do this. And if they don't, it's going to be a tough road to hoe. And then we got to talk, they lose this game, then tomorrow morning we're talking about Kevin Durant a lot.
Probably so. Well, yeah. Especially if they lose, it's going to be because of how it looks offensively with this team. So you're right. It's, you start to envision, you know, as they have a half court offense that just looks like 24 seconds to nowhere every time.
Yeah.
They're not great at running sets. They take a lot of contested shots. the guy who's supposed to be their point guard is only really engineering the offense half the time he's on the floor.
Yeah.
The rest of the time he's jacking up threes. Yeah. You sit and think a lot about what a guy who can get his own offense would look like on this team.
And by losing the home court advantage, obviously we still have more home games after this. But what I mean is you lose the chance to have it start as a, like, if you
got to win one in Golden State,
you tie it up tonight. Yeah. Then now you've got three games with two games at home.
Absolutely.
So it just, yeah, like, this is absolutely critical and crucial.
Yep.
The 3-1 is bad enough, but you've just got to go ahead and even it back up tonight.
Yep. So let's get that done. Here was Jalen Green. Do you think Draymond even gives a crap about Jalen? Here's Jalen Green with his version of trash talking after the game was over on Saturday. This is after a performance in which Jalen Green scored 9 points. He had this to say when he was asked about Draymond doing all the talking. The two of them got into a back and forth after the final buzzer on Saturday. Here was Jalen Green.
Yeah, it was just talking. You know, he can't really do much of anything else, so talking is his only way.
Burn. Burn, Draymond. Yeah.
You know what? I like it better than if he had said, like, oh, you know, they're better than us, and they're just.
You like that he punched back a little bit.
I feel like the problem is that when he punches back, he's doing it in the exact same tone of voice that he uses for every single thing ever. And yeah,
you ever seen that Simpsons where Mr. Burns is warming up for a boxing match and he's just tapping Smithers or whoever it is, like, in their rib cage, and they're just standing there. That's Jalen Green talking trash right there.
Yeah, I wish Steven Adams had said it. Or, yes. You know, if somebody, even if Fred VanVleet, despite the, you know, he would have said it after missing a shot, statistically likely, that it might have sounded better or felt better.
It was a huge missed opportunity. You know, I'm sitting here saying this is the biggest game tonight, back since they played Golden State in 2019. Similar to 2019. Last night, or Saturday night, I should say, huge missed opportunity with a prominent member of the Golden State Warriors out injured. That 2019 series was the one where Kevin Durant tore his Achilles, and then the Rockets they're not able to close out Game 5 with no Durant out there. And then Game 6, they don't have Durant for the whole game. I wonder if Tillman, do we have the audio here for Tillman, Ben? Yeah, like, I wonder if Tillman was feeling similar, Tillman Fertitta, the owner of the team, if he was feeling similar after Saturday's game as he was following the Golden State series with no Kevin Durant, Achilles tear Kevin Durant, back 6 years ago.
Well, you know, I'm a fighter, and you know, that's my culture. And I think the longer that I own this team, they're going to pick up more of my culture is that we had them. We should have stepped on their throat the other night and cut their throat, okay? It's not let's make a few shots and win. It's step on their throat, and let's take it back to Houston and end it in six. And we'll pick up a few Tillmanisms along the way in the next few years.
Okay. I kind of feel like that's how I felt after Saturday. No Jimmy Butler. Now, we're not for sure that Jimmy Butler plays tonight, but he didn't play on Saturday. And Steph getting 35 on you is not what killed you in that game. Buddy Hield and Gary Payton II combining for 33 points off the bench on very efficient shooting. Gary Payton II was 7 of 9 shooting, and Buddy Hield knocked down 5 3-pointers. That's what killed you in that game.
All those that is all true, and yet it was also it yielded 104 points. You know, like, that's they're so decrepit in terms of shooting that they have to be absolutely perfect defensively. That's where everything falls apart for the Rockets, is that you should be able to win a few games every now and then when you got to score 104 points. But this Rockets team isn't that team. You're going to have nights where Buddy Hield goes off and where Steph Curry is going to be Steph Curry. I guess one hope, and this feels like a meager hope to have, but would be that Jimmy Butler comes back and he's fighting through an injury and he's in a lot of pain. And by virtue of him being out there, he's actually a minus for them.
Mm-hmm.
There can be an avenue where, man, all right, he's out there, but he's not himself, but they're playing. The Warriors are playing like Jimmy Butler is himself, and that throws enough of a wrench into it that you can hold him down to well below 100 again.
That might be the best version of Jimmy Butler to get, is the I'm going to give it a go Jimmy Butler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all right, I'm going to give it a go and see how this goes. And and they're treating him like he's All-Star Jimmy Butler.
Right.
So we'll see.
They got to go on the attack. Look, they're in some respects, a young team. They've got veteran experience and leadership, but the youth part of it, and in game two, it's just classic NBA playoff series type of stuff. It swings wildly from game to game. You feel just incredibly depressed after every loss, and it seems like they could never win again. Look, in game two, they came back and looked like a much different version of themselves. In game one, the young guys like Jalen Green were adjusting to playing in the playoffs for the first time. In game three, they were adjusting to playing in, not just on the road in the playoffs, but at Golden State for the first time. So hopefully we see that same rebound that we saw in game two.
All right, text in 713-572-4610. Let's circle back to the Texans. Let's get to know the draft class here, particularly the top three guys. Let's get to know the draft class. Let's get DeMeco Ryan's thoughts on the prominent players taken in this draft. And one particular player had maybe the greatest phone call, the greatest phone call from the GM, from Nick Caserio, three words, and he just kept saying them, this player, over and over and over again. This is some fantastic audio that we've got coming up for you, and we'll do that coming up next.